Tesvava Da Aleph, 24th of February, Dr. Yossi Adler, Halachic Approach to Donating or Selling One's Organs.
Share a few thoughts on an Indian with you. I know a few weeks ago my son Pekhasvi gave a beautiful drosha on the lomdas behind this shaila, so I'm sure you all remember that very clearly, so I'm not going to go over that again. But what I thought would be worth doing is building on that a little bit to just clarify the shittas behind it, and then talk a little bit about the practical halakhic aspects. The subject sort of first came to my attention maybe a couple of months ago now when somebody phoned me from Eretz Yisrael, a young Kollel man called me, and he said he'd seen the publicity put out by there's an organization called Matnas Chayim, which encourages people to donate kidneys to people who are on dialysis, who need a kidney transplant, and people who are healthy and have got two functioning kidneys are encouraged to donate organs. And he felt that he'd really like to do this. It's something he feels he can do. He can help save somebody's life. And he really wants to do it. And I thought he was actually asking me what I thought about it, which he was. But in fact, really what he wanted me to do was to persuade his parents that it wasn't such a terrible thing to do. So we had a discussion about it. And that caused me perhaps just to go into the Indian a little bit more thoroughly. The situation is that there's a massive shortage of organs of people with end-stage kidney failure. There's a massive shortage of organs that they required in order to be able to. Over many years, there's been the idea of getting kidneys from people who've died in accidents, usually, and you have a dead donor kidneys. But that doesn't fulfill the demand, and the result's also better if you take kidney from a live patient. We've all got two kidneys, we only need one. So people donate their kidneys to somebody who needs it. And traditionally, that's always usually been from a family member, a close family member. They've got somebody who's ill, and they decide they want to donate them an organ. What's come much more to the forefront in recent years is the idea of altruistic donors, that people just decide that they want to donate kidneys because to a stranger, nobody they know, in order to help to save a life. The situation in the UK, for example, is that there are 6,000 people on the waiting list for transplants, so there are less than 3,000 operations a year, and about 350 people die a year while on the waiting list who never receive a transplant. And we know that people who get a living donor kidney, that kidney will usually last 15 to 20 years on average. If they're young, they can get another transplant 20 years later. Some may last longer. And we know that if people get transplanted before they go on to dialysis, on average, they'll live 10 to 15 years longer than somebody who's just treated with dialysis and maybe getting a transplant much later down the line. On the other hand, as far as our last discussion is concerned, we have to realize it's not usually immediately life-saving operation. It's not, for example, we'll talk a little about liver or lung donations, where you've got a person who's critically ill, and if they don't get a transplant within a very short period of time, they're going to die. Most people can survive on dialysis for quite a long period of time, but we know that by getting a kidney will improve their overall prognosis and they'll live longer, and their quality of life will of course be much better because they don't have a requirement to go onto a machine 3 times a week, whatever the dialysis they're using. So we're certainly helping to improve people's quality of life, and we're helping to improve people's longevity, although we're not necessarily in a situation where there's an immediate koach nefesh. As far as the risk to the donor is concerned, it's extremely small. The figures which are quoted is that less than 1 in 3,000 mortality risk of a donor dying during the process, and it's probably even less than that. Many censors have never seen a donor die. There are occasional complications of surgery, but on the whole, the immediate problem for the donor is very small. He'll be out of by keyhole surgery. He'll be out of hospital within 24 hours, usually back at work within a week. And the study suggests, and live donation has been going on since the 1970s, and the study suggests that donors have the same life expectancy as people with two kidneys. In other words, a healthy person who gives up one kidney will live for as long as somebody who's got two kidneys. It's a little bit counterintuitive because there must be people who eventually develop kidney failure, and because they've only got one kidney, will therefore have a problem as a result of it. The point is that most people who develop kidney failure in both kidneys at the same time, and therefore it doesn't make much difference whether you've got one or two. But there are cases where, for example, you get a stone blocking one kidney, and as a result of that it fails, or something like that. So there are four causes of kidney failure where only one kidney is affected, and if that's your only kidney, then you in turn are going to need to have a transplant or dialysis. And of course there must be people who develop cancers in their only remaining kidney, and then their only remaining kidney has to be removed. You could argue that since they've only got one kidney, they've got a 50% reduction of the risk of getting cancer in the first place. But even if you assume that this happens in a very small number of cases, it probably doesn't make its way into the statistics of mortality, because these people will not die as a result of that. They'll just end up on dialysis in turn, and maybe have to end up their lives on dialysis or getting transplants. So there must be some people who will suffer it, but the vast, vast majority of people's lives will not be affected by the fact that they've given up a kidney for them. You might ask, why did Oxford create us with two kidneys if we only need one? That's more of a Hashkafa Gashan, and maybe it was in order to be able to give it away to people who need it. I don't know. So the question is, should we be encouraging people to sign up for this Matnas Chaim, young, healthy people, and give away a kidney in order to help save somebody's life? Then there's the question of donation of other organs. The liver, for example, liver lobe, you donate a lobe of the liver, has also been going on for some time. That's a much more complicated process. It's a 5-hour operation for the donor himself. He'll usually be in hospital for a week. There's a significant number of complications, although the mortality rate is only about 1%, but there's significant risk of complications, etc. And it would be very unusual, and I don't think it would be accepted for anybody to give a liver lobe except to somebody who was a close friend or a family member. And the question is, what would be the halachic approach to that? They quote a 35% significant complication rate for a donor. Sometimes the donors end up in hospital for weeks, and that's the situation of that. But the one advantage of the donor is that even after you give away your lobe, within a few months, the liver regenerates and your liver function will be completely back to normal. Within about 6 months of surgery, the liver gets back to its original state. So it's, the liver has this capacity to regenerate, so you don't have any long-term loss of function. The other major organ which is given from live donors is a lobe of a lung. You've got, between your two lungs, you've got 5 lobes. But you can live well with 4 lobes. So somebody whose lung is functioning very poorly can receive from 2 separate donors a lobe each at the same time. So he'll have 2 functioning lobes of the liver. And the donors will each have 1 lobe less, but they can live fairly normal life with that. Again, it's a significant operation. There's a certain mortality involved in the operation. And you will have a decrease in lung function afterwards by the fact that you've only got 4 lobes instead of 5. So again, here, there's more of a shaila in terms of what the risk of to the donor, that there's a significant risk to the donor, which has to be taken into account in this. And finally, we come to bone marrow donations, in which there's really no risk whatsoever. If the marrow is taken, now it's often you can give it by stem cells, which is, you can take blood, normal large amounts of blood, and remove the stem cells and use those to infuse, and then there's really no risk whatsoever. Even if you have to take bone marrow, it's a small operation under general anesthetic to take bone marrow from the person, but the risk of that is virtually zero, and it regenerates in a very short time. So there we've got the case of something which carries virtually no risk and no long-term effects. So let's try and understand the halachic approach to these things. There are a few basic principles we have to set out. One is, we all know that the Pasuk says, the overriding principle of all the mitzvahs of the Torah is that we have to try to preserve life. And we know that that includes not only, for example, you're not allowed to kill any other people, but you're not allowed to damage yourself either. And the Rambam clearly says, V'chein ha-horig es atzmo, is considered as shofech domim, v'avon hariga b'yodei v'chai misa l'shamayim. A person is not allowed to kill himself, he's not allowed to damage himself. The Shulchan Aruch says, expresses it, ein reshus l'odom ha-gufei klal. We're not the owners of our body, we're only the people who look after. We've got the duty to look after our body during the time Hakadosh Baruch Hu has given to us, but it's not in our control, and therefore we have to keep that in mind, that making any decisions, we have to make them according to halacha, not according to our own whim. You can give a present of your nechosim, your property, if you want to give it away for some crazy reason, that's up to you. But your guf, you haven't got control of it. And then there's the other posse, which is very significant, is the halacha of lo sam et al dam re'echa. You mustn't stand by if you see somebody who's in danger. You've got a chiyuv of the lav, to be you're over lav, if you don't go and try and save a life which you've got the possibility of saving. And that's Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says if you see somebody drowning in the river, or being attacked by wild animals, or by robbers, chayv latzilo, and the posse says, the Gemara says, because it's a posse of lo sam et al dam re'echa. Interestingly, the Gemara then asks, but there's another source for the fact that you have to try and save somebody if they're in danger. Or it says, V'ha'al me'hocha nafka, do we learn that out from the Samet Adam Re'echa? Surely we should learn that out. The Gemara says, Avedas gufa minayin, just as a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, of giving, returning somebody's lost property, which is property, you have to return to them. So also, if you've got a possibility of returning their guf to them, their health, their life to them, then surely you've got the chiv to do that as well. And the Gemara says, yes, we need both psukim. One tells us that you're mechuyv to do it yourself. One tells us you're even mechuyv to go and spend money. If you couldn't do it yourself, but you could hire somebody to save somebody's life, you're mechuyv to spend money in order to save somebody's life as well. And we'll see why that's important, that we've got these two sources shortly. And finally, of course, we know that there's a din that you're not even allowed to kill somebody in order to save your own life. It's one of the Gimel Averis, and the Gemara famously says, "My chosas de domet de doch samuk tvei, dimme domet zachavra samuk tvei." Who says your blood is redder than his blood? Who says you've got a right, and if somebody says, I'll kill you if you don't kill him, you can't go and kill him in order to save your own life, because who says your life is more valuable than his life? So those are the four principles that we have to remember. We've got mitzvah to preserve life, which overrides all mitzvahs. We have to realize the body is not own property. We have to realize we're not allowed to kill somebody in order to preserve one's own life. As we discussed, there's a question whether that applies only if you're actively killing somebody, or does it even apply if you're passively doing it. And finally, we have to know there's a mitzvah to save life wherever you've got the ability to. So the source for to what extent, to be kind in the mitzvah of trying to save somebody's life, do you have to do that even if you're involving some risk to your own life? That's the basic question here. We know you've got a chiyuv to save life, and if you can, does that even apply if you're applying some risk to your own life? And the source of that is the Hakas Maimonides, which quotes Yerushalmi, which says, "Afilu lahachnas atzma besofik sakono chayev." To put yourself into a doubtful, dangerous situation, you're mechuyav. So you see somebody drowning, there's a certain degree of risk to yourself. You're not a brilliant swimmer, but there's a good chance you'll be able to save him. But you may get pulled down by the waves yourself. That God's Maimonides says, you're mechuyav to do that, because he's vada going to die if you don't do anything. You're only a sofek, and therefore you have to at least do whatever you can. So you have to even put yourself into a sofek of sakana in order to save somebody's life. That's the shit of that God's Maimonides. The Menchus Chinuch asks an obvious question on that, among other questions. But the Menchus Chinuch asks, why should the mitzvah of Losamot be any different from any other mitzvah? You're not mechuyev to put yourself into the mechuyev to save somebody's life as a lav, Losamot al tamrecho. You're not mechuyev to risk your life in order not to break Shabbos, for example. So you're mechuyev to break Shabbos in Losamot. So why should you be mechuyev not to be over on the issa of Losamot al tamrecho? Why should you have to risk your life? And he says, even though he doesn't understand it, but he actually passes like the God's Maimonides, he says, "Trichon anu lekabel be'emo." We have to accept the words of Yerushalmi be'emo, even if we don't understand them. The other question, and I think as you mentioned this, where this comes up, is of course, is are you mechuyav to put yourself in danger to save somebody's life? For example, a doctor or a nurse who's got an Ebola patient in the hospital, are you mechuyav to treat that patient, or can you say, "No, I don't want to risk saving risk my life in order to save this patient. There's a certain risk, however much precautions you take. I might get the infection. We see some nurses did get the infection. Are you mukhuyu to do that? It's famous psak of Briskerov when there was a cholera outbreak where he paskened that you were mukhuyu, people mukhuyu to be metapel with the cholera patients, even though they might themselves be at risk of contracting cholera from it. You can't pass them from these mice around necessarily, and it could be that an epidemic situation is different where the whole society depends on it. But that's but that is really a very similar China to this.
Is it different if you're a doctor or not?
Also questionable. That's one of the criteria. Yeah. All of these things come into the mix, and we can't pass on all different China sort of this. The problem is that the Shulchan Aruch doesn't pass from like this Hakas Magnus. The Shulchan Aruch says Chai Vodem Hatzilus Chaveru Bein Begufa Bein B'Mamoino, but he doesn't mention anything about putting yourself at risk, even in order to do it. And in fact, the Rambam says Im Yochel Hatzilo, if you're able to save him, which is much more the Rambam holds, only if you're able to do it without risk to yourself. And it seems, and it's a bit problematic. If you've got a Yerushalmi and don't have any Bavli, which contradicts it, why is it that the Shulchan Aruch doesn't bring this in? The Sma clearly says that since the Shulchan Aruch doesn't bring it, it's because he doesn't hold of it, and the Shulchan Aruch therefore holds it. You don't put yourself into a Sofik Sakona in order to save somebody else's life, unlike the Pesach of the Mitzchanoch and the Pesach based on Hagos Ma'amnes. And he says because you don't find it in any of the Poskim, the Rif, the Rambam, the Rosh, the Tur, none of them bring this Pesach of Hagos Ma'amnes. Why do they not bring it, the Poskim are busy with, if it is Yerushalmi and you don't have any contradictory Bavli? And some of the Ravalenberg suggests that in fact that Gemara that we quoted before is a source in the Bavli to say that you shouldn't do it. Because the obvious answer for the Gemara when asked why do we need two sources for those, for not to save something, those Samadam Marecha and Hashavas Aveda, and the Gemara says one tells you have to do it yourself, one is the Mono. Why doesn't the Gemara say one of them tells you even have to put yourself at risk to do it? That's why you need an extra Rosh. And the fact that Gemara doesn't say that, it sounds as if you don't have to do it. And the other major source for it is Gemara, which as we discuss at length, which is the case where the two people were going in the desert, and there's only enough water for one of them. And the way both in the Tziv in Emes Shaila and Maran Shiklan shut on that Gemara is that obviously, if they're both going to die, right? The question is, if only one of them's got a jug of water, does he have to share it with his friend? And then they may both die, or can he just drink it himself and not worry about his friend dying? Rabbi Kiva says, you can drink the water yourself and you don't have to share it because your life comes first. The way they learn Pshat is it obviously can't be that it's talking about where they're definitely both going to die if you share it, because that wouldn't make any sense. How can anybody hold that you should share it and therefore both die? It must be that if you share it, there's a chance that they could both survive, and therefore, the Shaila is, should he share it and therefore have a chance of saving his friend, but he may die, he's putting himself into a Sofik Sakona by sharing it, or can he say, no, I don't want to take the risk of my own life by sharing this water, rather let me drink the water myself, and unfortunately he's going to die, I haven't got a chiv to save him, because by saving it, I may not have enough water and I may not survive myself. So those are the possible sources in the Bavli to argue the Shami, but the fact is that with the halacha is not like Hagas Ma'amnes, the halacha is that you're not mechuyev to put yourself into a Sakona in order to save somebody else. And that's really the bottom line, that you definitely is no chiyuv to put yourself into a situation of Sakona in order to save somebody's life. The question is, what about injuring yourself, even if there's no Sakona involved, what about injuring yourself in order to save somebody's life? This case, our case, where you're a kidney donor, you're giving away a kidney, you're going to have a scar, you're going to be injured, you're going to be lacking in something. Are you mechuyev to injure yourself, to give up something, or can it save somebody's life? And the key shaila there is the key posek who discusses this, where really all the other possum are based on, is the Rav Vaz. And the Rav Vaz says that the person who asked him wanted to bring proof from Shabbos that you're mechuyev to injure yourself and will save somebody else. The Rav Vaz says, the answer is zu midas chasidus. To injure yourself to save somebody else is a midas chasidus, but there's certainly no chiyev to do it. And he gives two reasons. He says, one is, any time you injure yourself, it may come to be some sakana. Perhaps you'll start bleeding, you won't be able to control the blood loss, and you'll die as a result of it. Therefore, you can never bring the chuyu of somebody to injure himself, because every case of injuring himself may involve some sakana. And number two, he says, a pure Svari says, the ways of the Torah are pleasant ways, and mishpat harasenu have to be maskimim ala seichel. Without any source or makor for it, he says that we have to act in a way which is understandable and logical, and it's not logical to expect somebody to be lacking an organ in order to save somebody else. The case is if somebody says, I'll cut off your hand or I'm going to kill the other person. You can't expect somebody to walk around with a missing hand in order to save somebody else, to rochel tachinom, and that's the principle. You cannot be mechuyev somebody to do it, but it is a midas chasidus. And his final conclusion is that it's midas chasidus for ashrei chelko mishio chlamzev. Somebody can do it ashrei chelko, but anirufi as dati miyesh sofek sekonis nefoshes harize chosid shoyta. So he answers that if you can be injure yourself, and the risk is very small. At the beginning, he says that any kind of injury, there's always going to be some risk involved. But that risk he's obviously absorbing and taking into account. Even considering that very slight risk that occurs, it's a midas chasidus to do it. Because of that slight risk, you can't be mechuyev to do it, but because of that slight risk, it's a midas chasidus in order to injure yourself or give up a limb in order to save somebody else. But if somebody's putting himself into a significant risk for it, that he calls chosid shoyta. So the maskana is very clear, kontra ravas, there's no chiyuv to injure yourself. You're not, if you're putting yourself into a sofik sakana, you're a chosid shoyta. But if you're not, if you're injuring yourself without being a chosid, without a risk to life, then that's a midas chasidus. So there's three stages here, really. There's a situation where you're actually putting yourself at significant risk. That's called chosid shoyta, and you're not supposed to do that. You don't pass him out of God's mind, it's clearly. Or there's a case where you're putting yourself at minimal risk, but you're injuring yourself. That's a midas chasidus. Or there's a case where there's no risk at all, and no injury at all, which we'll come to in a minute. So this Ravaz is passed by the Rosh Hashulchan, it's passed by the Mishnah Berurah, and they all say that it's a midas chasidus to do this, but if it's a risk, it's a chosid shoyta. But they all yoroshen that lo lishma al atzma yos midai. A person shouldn't be overly worried about himself. You can always say, oh, there's going to be some risk, I mustn't do it, it's a chosid shoyta. You shouldn't look at that risk too greatly. You shouldn't be medak. The lashon of the Mishbru is, ha-medaktik ba'atzma bekach ba'ledekach. As for sure, if somebody's too medaktik about his own health, he might actually come to get ill. A Shporkel might work it out. He'll come to get ill in some other way. So you have to be logical about it. You have to consider, is this a significant risk, in which case you shouldn't do it, you'll be a chosid shoyta under Ravaz, or is it only minimal risk which you're supposed to be taken? And the way the Poskim say it is, if it's a kind of risk which a person would take in everyday life, in order in his business or in other activities which you do, which may be slightly risky, but you'll still do them because you need it for your panasa, then that's the kind of risk which you would be expected to take for this in this situation. So, with that background, we can now perhaps just try and analyze what would be the halacha in this various situations which we discussed before. But just one other factor which you should just maybe consider when we're putting this into the cholim pot is there a difference between a chole lefoneinu and going out and put yourself on a register? All of these cases, when you see somebody drowning, what are you supposed to do about it? Does the same thing apply where you don't know any ill person, you don't need any at the moment. All you know is that there's a register which you can put yourself on, and you're offering to go to do it, the chatchila. Just because of these cases where you're supposed to do it, if you're faced with that situation, does that apply where you're not faced with this situation at all? I mentioned to this person who called me at the time, and he said to me, yeah, maybe that's true, but I've contacted this Matan's Chaim organization, they've told me about Yidin Sfas, who's on end-stage renal failure and needs it, so now I know him. So what's the difference? Just one stage, is that one phone call going to make such a big difference? So that's one thing to consider. With the Loshon of Rishon Zalman, for example, when he encourages kidney donation, etc., he says, if you've got a kohen in front of you and he's known to him, and that may not apply in the situations we're talking about. The other thing is to consider is that, as we said before, in the many cases of kidney donation are not immediate chol. It's not like somebody's drowning in the sea and they're going to die if they're not going to do anything about it. These are cases whereby you're going to prolong their life, but you're not necessarily going to save their life. So we'll come to that in a minute. Just one other question I just wanted to put to you briefly is, would it have made any difference if he'd phoned me up and not said anything about liking the idea of saving somebody's life, but he said to me, I'm desperately, desperately short of money. I can't afford to pay the rent on my Dira. I don't know where I'm going to be able to get food to feed my children from. Somebody's offered me $5,000 for my kidney. Should I give it to him? Would that change the Shaila at all? And although instinctively we think, doesn't sound like the same thing, doesn't sound the right thing to do, if we analyze it, l'chora, it shouldn't make any difference at all. We know that if we've assumed that this is a mitzvah that you're doing, the fact that you take money for it doesn't make any difference. We know you're allowed to take money for mitzvahs. Every kol yonah man who takes money for sitting and learning knows that you're allowed to take money for mitzvahs. The sefer is allowed to take money for writing a sefer Torah. So there's no restriction on taking money in order to do mitzvahs. So therefore, although you're not allowed to injure yourself for money, although, depending on the dream injury, we know that Rav Chisda, for example, the Gemara says, lifted up his trousers when he was going through the thorns, because he rather injured himself rather than damaging his trousers. So there are halachas that you are allowed to, in order to save money, you are allowed to undergo a certain degree of injury. We know that, for example, Yeshua's got a famous tshuva about hunting, that you're allowed to be a hunter even though there's some risk, if that's your panasa, if that's the way you make it. When the Oscom say you're allowed to volunteer, for example, to the army to become a soldier, even though there's a certain degree of risk in it. So in order for panasa, you're allowed to take certain degrees of risk. And certainly, for doing mitzvahs, as we said, you're allowed to take money. Therefore, there wouldn't seem to be any reason why you shouldn't be allowed to take money once we've decided, if halacha is that you're allowed to, or it's encouraged, it's a good thing to donate, there wouldn't seem to be any restriction, any reason why you shouldn't take any money for it. Taking money for donation is banned in almost all countries, all modern countries, because great concerns about setting up a business, poor people are going to be put under pressure in order to donate organs, the whole thing will become a big business. It happens in India, except you have agents who try and get people to sell their organs, and there are big concerns about exploitation. And in halacha, there's big shaila whether would you say that therefore rather people should die rather than getting organs in order to avoid long-term exploitation, and that's something which is discussed in the poskim. And the possible conclusion that on the whole, that it seems to be that the government can set up restrictions on this in order to avoid the whole situation becoming an exploited situation. But on an individual basis, there wouldn't seem to be any reason why you shouldn't sell your organs just as much in the same way as you can donate. Sorry?
They're not your organs.
Right, but if you've got a mitzvah to give it, if we've said it's a mitzvah to save somebody's life, it's a mitzvah to give it, once you're right, you wouldn't be allowed to do it just if it wasn't for any purpose at all. You wouldn't be allowed to do it for research. For example, if a scientist said to you, I'll give you $5,000 because I want to do research in your kidney, that you wouldn't be allowed to do. It's not yours. But if you can do it in order to save somebody's life, and you've got a mitzvah to do it anyway, then once you're doing it, there's no reason not to take money for doing the mitzvah, just as you can take money for writing a sefer Torah. There's no restriction. That seems to be the haskama of the pasuk. So therefore, just let's summarize what we've got here. We said that if you've got a chayla in front of you, you've got a definite sakana, and you've got minimal risk, then you'd be mechuyev to actually give to do this action of hatzana. In the kidney, we said probably doesn't fall into that situation because it's a question whether this is called chayla lefaneinu. There is a question whether the ill person is considered to be in a definite situation of sakana at that moment. And in any case, we've got the restriction that you're actually giving up a limb, you're giving away a kidney, and the Rav says that takes away any chiyuv. So it certainly seems clear there's no chiyuv for you to go onto this register and give up a kidney, even if Chashon, a family member, was affected. You've got no chiyuv to do it for. Nobody can be mechayiv, nobody can coerce you. You get situations where one family member is compatible, the others aren't, and one tries to coerce the other to do it. Bottom are very clear, you can't coerce somebody. We're talking about somebody who's midas chasidus, and therefore it's up to the person himself. So therefore, as far as kidney donation is concerned, it would seem that it would fall into the category of the Radvaz, where the sakona is very small, but there is a significant amount, but you're giving up an organ, and therefore it's a midas chasidus. It would fall into the category of midas chasidus. There's certainly no chiyuv, but it shouldn't come under the category of chosid shota either. When we come to blood or bone marrow donation, we've got minimal risk. You're not giving up any limb. There's no permanent loss. The chayla is often in front of you. They're drives, and you know there's certain ill people who need it at the time. And there's certainly an definite immediate life-saving sakana. So l'chaira, donating blood or bone marrow is an absolute chiyuv. If a situation comes where you get the opportunity to do that, l'chaira, it would seem, according to this, it'd be an absolute chiyuv to go and donate blood or bone marrow in order to save somebody's life. As far as liver or lung transplantations are concerned, or the same thing is what happens if there's a kidney donor who wasn't in good health. Let's say there was a sibling of somebody who was ill, or a parent of somebody who was ill, they want to donate the kidney to them, and the doctor says, sorry, we've done the test, you're not in perfect health, we feel that there's a certain risk in removing your kidney, and they say, but I want to save my child anyway, if I'll be came. That would be the situation where you are putting yourself at a significant risk to save somebody else. That would be the, that would fall under category, l'chaira, of what the Radvaz describes as chaser chota. Wouldn't seem to be an avera behind it, but it will come to the category of what the Radvaz describes as a chaser chota to do it. But nevertheless, it may be that to save somebody's life, it's worth being a chaser chota. That's something that somebody would have to weigh up for himself. But liver and lung transplant, we say, provide a higher risk to the donor. But there are cases where there's definite sakana, and it would always be a case where there's a chola lefanenu, because nobody's going to go on a register for donating lung or liver. So there would be in a situation where there's definitely no chiyuv, and you'd have to weigh up, is this midas chasidus, or is this chosid shaita, according to the degree of risk that would be involved in any particular case. And then you'd have to weigh up, is it worth being a chosid shaita in order to save somebody's life? So those are really the three main categories which we have to try and weigh up each of these donations into. It would seem, as we said, that taking money, once, if the halacha is that you can do it, taking money for it would not seem to be a problem. And that would, I think, sort of encapsulate the way the poskim look at this shaila. Mitzvah Hashem, we should never have any need for any of these things. We should find other ways to do our mitzvahs.
Okay.